From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
While most of us focus on keeping deer from browsing our gardens, today's guest actually once managed what was called a deer browse garden as part of a 10-year research study to learn more about what these big herbivores do and don't do when offered the opportunity, and how different strategies affect their behavior. Tips for gardening where deer are present is today's topic. So more in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, the leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
Today's guest is Brad Roller, who has held top horticultural positions at the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York, and at the New York Botanical Garden on a private estate. He's currently a trustee at Innisfree Garden in Millbrook, where he'll give a virtual talk on Wednesday afternoon, February 23rd, on our topic today, effective solutions for dealing with deer. Hi, Brad. I know everyone's looking forward to this. And I know this will be a popular topic for sure. You know, you actually had a deer browse garden, which I love. I just love the idea of that. And it's like, you know, most of us are like, no.
Yeah. How would you like to design a garden for inviting deer into it? But yes, I did. It was, I'll give you a brief background on it.
Yeah.
I started off working in the 1972 at the newly formed Cary Arboretum of the New York Botanical Garden, which became the Institute of Ecosystem Studies. And working on an arboretum and having display gardens and things like this, obviously deer were always problematic in there. So I've had to deal with deer for over 40 years in my career.
Yes.
And it's always the top question that people ask, or one of the top questions: what can they plant that deer won't eat? And that coincided with a lot of research that the Cary Arboretum and then the Institute of Ecosystem Studies was doing in wildlife management. We had some postdoctoral associates who specialized in white-tailed deer management and some biologists. So basically, there was a lot of work going on deer especially with their potential harmful effects on the environment. But I was more interested in their impacts on landscape. So out of that grew an idea to develop a garden, which we can assess several things with deer. And actually, I was approached by Dr. Paul Curtis up at Cornell University, who had just completed, this is in the early 1980s, just completed his list of which categorized popular woody ornamentals for any inherent resistance to deer browsing. And this had been done at agricultural field stations around the state in kind of nursery situations in there. And he wanted to substantiate his work. And what was needed was assessing this inherent resistance in a more typical landscape setting.
And right. So that's right. That's where
that's
you
what
came
started.
In.
Right. Yeah. And we were getting ready to landscape a large area. So out of that grew, so traditional landscape design, but purposely interplanted in a landscape design were several different classes of vulnerable plants in there. But I also wanted to do a few other things other than substantiate the work that Dr. Curtis had done. By that time of the Arboretum, I had come in contact with literally thousands of Asian and European counterparts of our North American trees and shrubs in there. And I noticed that in our woody collections or where we were evaluating them, several were resistant to deer browsing. So I wanted to test a lot of plants that weren't on any deer lists at the time.
Right.
I also wanted to show homeowners what could happen if no protection measures were put in place in there. And then the biggest thing that I did was, in addition to evaluating individual plants, I also wanted to evaluate numerous methods of deterring deer through either spray-on repellents, scare devices and tactics, physical barriers such as fencing and things like this. So I did that as well.
Does scare tactics include going out and screaming at the top of your lungs?
Yes. Well, actually, I had motion detectors and I had AC/DC blaring at high volumes and things like this. But these are the things that have, you know, motion detectors, scarecrows, all sorts of things like this. I had, and even had a few people approach me to some chemical companies and entrepreneurs looking to do some efficacy studies on their either spray-on repellents or scare tactics. I had something I called the clapper, which made two pieces of wood which bang together, again, motion detector and things like this. So so this went on for about 10 years, Margaret, this evaluation. And I did annual surveys, periodic surveys to evaluate that and collated all the information and put it out to the public.
So I know with your talk, and again, it's going to be Wednesday afternoon, February 23rd, 2022, and it's virtual. And I'm going to give with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, we're going to give the information on how people can get a ticket for that. And you're going to talk about, you know, really how we've gotten to the densities of deer population that we have today and how they affect our lives, how they affect the environment, which we were just referring to a minute ago. And then in the talk, I know you say, you've told me, comes the part that today's listeners are eager for, some of the strategies, the tips.
Right.
And so, I mean, I assume you use a, you know, not counting on one thing, but more of a multi-layered strategy. I mean, you've as you said, you've evaluated barriers, repellents, all kinds of things. So where do you usually begin? Like, do you, do you ask people to look at like how heavy is their deer pressure before they take a strategy?
Yeah, relies on kind of 11 different strategies, and I can quickly go through them.
Okay.
Obviously, starting with proper plant selection in there, and there's hundreds. I bet I have hundreds of plant lists from state agencies, garden clubs, you name it, on deer resistant plants in there. It's important to remember that while they may have been effective in certain landscapes, what deer select in one landscape, they might turn their nose at in your landscape. So it's there's a lot of other factors, which I'm going to talk about briefly, that comes in to do this. But start with those plant lists. And obviously,
if you have deer pressure, right.
So when you're looking to landscape or add new plants, that's a good thing to have in your hip pocket. Obviously, everybody knows that the gray foliage, the woolly or hirsute foliage, the plants with the aromatic plants are all resistant and things like this. But as I say, I've seen landscapes where deer will not bother hostas or daylilies, and I've seen other landscapes where they're just hammered in there.
Sure.
So what I like to do is I encourage people to visit neighbors and gardens, public gardens and things like this. Gardeners love to talk about gardening, and they will be only too happy to tell you what in your neighborhood they have found that deer will eat in those, because those deer will likely be your deer, if you will.
So get localized insights.
That's correct.
Yes.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Good. All right. We start
one
there.
One other thing, and just, you know, if we had to use strictly deer resistant plants, it'd be a pretty dull landscape.
Yes.
So I always tell people to plan on protecting vulnerable plants in there. And one thing that I started doing, and I have some anecdotal evidence, but I really didn't do due diligence on evaluating this, is I've done several landscapes where I kind of front my beds, especially on the outside perimeters and things like this, where deer are accessing, with highly resistant plants, and cite some of the more vulnerable plants in more interior sections.
Yes.
However, that is something that I've seen work in some cases, but really no evidence to back that up. More importantly, the second tip is to become what I call a forecaster, both environmental and biological in there. I'm always looking at the size, health, and vigor of my local deer herd that, you know, in my neighborhood, especially as the fall approaches. Several factors will influence that. When you have the perfect storm going into the fall season of a prolonged summer drought, where the quality of the grasses and forbs is very poor, very poor mast year, acorns and nut production and things like this, and then persistent snow cover, that's the perfect storm for deer to take non-traditional food, and they will eat anything to ward off starvation.
They're
going to
come visit our gardens for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
In the spring of the year, in the summer, when I'm driving around and I see the local deer in the fields and things like this, I'm noticing, hey, am I seeing twins or even triplets? Is that normal, you know, doe with her two fawns that I'm seeing in the evenings? Now have additional deer in that group and things
right.
like this. And there, so I'm always looking at these kind of factors in developing my strategy in there.
Okay.
And right along that is what I call knowing the deer in your neighborhood. Where and when do you see deer on your property in there? Are they passing through, or do they seem to be around at all hours of the day and night? Deer typically are nocturnal feeders. They will be getting off their beds in their safe areas, their sanctuaries, in the late afternoons, and foraging in the evening and throughout the night, and then in the mornings heading back to their sanctuaries. So when and where you see them, as you know, deer have traditional what we call deer runs, which they will move through areas and things like this. Know those and in there and find
yes.
out which ones they're doing. Deer are a matriarchal. So knowing the deer, which ones are using your property is very important. And those are the ones that you have to upset, if you will,
yes.
In there. One thing that will do that is anytime I'm doing new plantings, even though they might not be vulnerable or a time of year where deer will select it, I like to spray those new plantings with an odor-based repellent. Deer are very curious by nature, and if their first contact with a new planting is a bad one, there is evidence to show that they will avoid it. So typically for the new plantings, I will spray them for the growing season and to try to pattern those deer off that.
Oh, interesting. Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great mm-hmm. tip. Yeah.
Persistence. You can't just be, deer protection is a year round thing. About the only month that there's a kind of a reprieve is the month of May, when the grass is so green and succulent and high sugar content that's what the deer are concentrating on. But you have to do this year round. There's evidence that if you do this year round, and especially put up deterrents, odor-based deterrents, physical barriers on where deer are accessing your properties, those runs I've mentioned, you can pattern those deer off your property over time. And what really works good is what I call a neighborhood strategy. I hate to see people put up deer fencing and then they force those deer onto their neighbors and things like this. I've seen some cases where neighbors get together and develop a strategy that is very effective. And if persistent, you will pattern those deer off your property.
Mm-hmm.
However, if new deer show up, and that's why I say know the deer in your neighborhood, you may have to keep on that
right.
as well.
Right. So a neighborhood sort of collaborative efforts may be more effective.
Yes, very effective. Yeah. I've seen this done in homeowners associations and things like this as well.
Now, you said, Sesh, you said odor deterrence and so forth. So tell us what do you mean by that when we're
sure.
gonna yeah.
Sure. With spray on repellents, there's basically those that are odor based and those that are taste based. And recently in the last few years, they've been combining both odor and taste based repellents into one repellents in there. So I obviously during the warm weather months, I do use spray on repellents. I'll use taste-based ones typically early spring before the foliage, in there when they are browsing, and switch to odor-based ones when things are fully foliate. And it's important to alternate whatever repellents that you're using to keep them off guard, to throw them a curve, if you will.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if there's new growth on a plant, and you sprayed it in early spring, I mean, the new growth isn't going to be protected. Do you know what I mean? You have to really keep up with this. So
that's
this is
that's
a commitment,
correct.
Right? Like you were talking about vigilance before.
That's correct. And also bear in mind that flower buds and things like lily scapes and,
yes,
and rose buds don't have the tissue to systemically take up systemic repellents. So those will be vulnerable in things like this.
Right.
So I could, if you'd like, Margaret, I could give you kind of my seasonal strategy for protecting plants.
Sure. I mean, that's fine. I mean, I whatever you think are the,
okay.
I mean, I'm a barrier. I'm an exclusion person. I'm a believer in keeping them out of here, but you know, that's my thing. And I'd love to know about some of the alternatives to the eight fence, you know, like prison wall kind of fencing.
Right, right, right. Typically in early spring to protect your daffodils and early spring ephemerals coming up and things like this, I'm a big believer in Milorganite, a fertilizer, activated sewage sludge, which actually has its label now for food and crops there. I spread Milorganite as a topical fertilizer at half strength, recommended for turf, in as soon as these bulbs start emerging. That will protect them in there. About a month after that, I spread the second half, if you will, and that'll get me through bloom period and into early spring. Importantly, if you're using Milorganite as a deer repellent, I've seen lots of problems where they're overusing it.
Yes.
Don't fertilize those beds again. They've got it for the year.
Right.
In there. Some people also make up little sachets of Milorganite and hang them, and that works as well in there. But once we have full leaf expansion, I go to my spray-on repellents in there, typically alternating between odor and taste-based ones. There's a plethora of them out on the market. I've evaluated them all. Some are a little bit better than others, but the important thing is none of the commercially available ones for homeowners, you're going to get more than 3 to possibly 4 weeks worth of protection on plants. So you must reapply in there.
Right.
I also like using some of the repellents that are actually fertilizers in there, like Bob-X and there's some other ones. Even Coast of Maine fermented salmon food is a great fertilizer, but also repellent. So when I'm looking for foliar feeds on roses or things like this, I might also use them as well.
So you get like double duty out of something that you needed anyway.
Double duty.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
However, as the season winds down into late summer, early fall, I kind of develop my strategy for winter protection based upon those forecasts that I've seen, you know, size of deer herds, health, mast, summer droughts, snow cover, and things like this. And if the conditions at perfect storm, I will definitely rely on physical barriers, deer fencing in there.
Yes.
And if you're smart and design your landscapes, I typically have galvanized metal pipe driven into the ground at grade level that accommodates 6-foot wooden stakes that has 6.5-foot deer fencing or deer netting, you know, all labeled for the beds and things like this. So literally on a Saturday afternoon in late October, I can put up my physical barriers for the winter time and things like
that. Okay, so you have it buried into the ground a piece of metal pipe that's like a receptacle. It's the female. And then you have the posts with the wire or the mesh already attached to them. And then you roll that out and you stick them in. That's very interesting. So that's a seasonal fence. Okay.
Now for individual specimens out in the yard and things like this, I use just regular 4-foot snow fencing with post, iron post, substantially driven into the ground. It's got to be rigid and strongly wired. And there's tips on the webs on how to do this on this. And if you have that perimeter about 18 to 24 inches from the furthest branches, if you will, that will work excellently. You'll have 100% success in there. If it's too close, they'll find weak point, or if it's too weak, they'll actually lean against it and start browsing on your conifers or rhododendrons, right, or wherever you're protecting. Right. If it's too far a perimeter, they'll jump inside, browse, and then jump out in there. So that 18 to 24 inches seems to be the things.
And they don't like to go inside is perceived to be, even if it's not from an 8-foot fence barrier, even a lower fence, like a vegetable garden, if it had a fence, a 4 or 5 foot fence, right, it will look intimidating. They won't want to jump in. So,
right. Small, yeah, areas, even small vegetable gardens, you can get away with a 4-foot fence, 4-foot electric picket, whatever you want. Larger areas where they can see across and things like this, they will jump that in there. So you don't, right, want to use low fencing for large areas. Low, okay, fencing is for individual specimens or small areas.
Okay.
Now, for large areas, if you don't want to go for the 7.5 or 8 foot conventional deer fencing, which a lot of people do, I've used what I call double perimeter fencing in there. Why the 4 foot works in small areas is deer's depth perception is a little bit suspect, so they're quite not sure where they're going to land when you have these smaller, lower barriers in there. So if you have something in your landscape, a picket fence, a stone wall, or something like this that pretty much encircles your landscape, if you set another barrier on the outside of that or the inside of that, about 4 to 5 feet away, you accomplish this throwing them off by the depth perception in,
yes,
there. And I have done this with something as simple as monofilament, which they cannot see in there, kind of throws them off. And I reinforce that by hanging some sachets or some scent darts with a really strong odor-based repellent or an essential oil like oil of wintergreen in there. And I also cut some ripstop white nylon in the shape of a deer's tail and hang a few of those on. Or the deer, when they're alarmed, will do a flag. They'll hold up their tails. Probably many of you have seen that. It's an alarm mechanism.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And how the scent-based repellents work is deer's sense of smell is their primary defense mechanism. If you have a strong odor in your landscape, they are very tentative to go into it because they can't rely upon that defense mechanism.
Right, right.
How to in there.
Yeah. So we have a couple of minutes left, mm-hmm, and I just want to make sure are there any other really key strategies that we need to know, since obviously people can, if they wish to join the talk and hear more, they can do that. But any other key strategies that we want to hit on? Because the parallel fence, the 2 4-foot parallel fence, 4 or 5 feet spaced apart, is such a great, it can be attractive and you can plant in, yes, between them, and it can be a nice addition to your landscape. It doesn't have to look again like a prison. So
that's correct. I have seen some really neat landscapes with this in that didn't look, it looked fine. It looked very good.
So is there like one more tip that we want to share?
I pretty much went at warp speed to give you some of those.
Because I heard that the professionals are using a chemical repellent that's, you know, and I didn't know about
it. Thank you, Margaret. You are correct.
Yeah.
I didn't mention it because it's not available to homeowners. The best, in my research, the best spray-on repellents are what we call thyram-based. Thyram's a fungicide, and it's a very effective repellent. There is now, and there are some products on the market that homeowners can buy that have thyram in it, but not at the concentrations needed. You can have your local landscaper who has a pesticide applicator's license spray on a product called Deer Pro. It's a restricted use pesticide, so it's not available to homeowners. But typically, if I spray this on in early November, on vulnerable plants for winter protection, I will get all winter protection with one spray on repellent if it's done under ideal conditions. One last tip, Margaret, quickly. If you or your professional is spraying on repellents during the wintertime, it is essential that you pick a day like today. The product has to dry on the on the leaf surface. And during winter, it takes a long time. If that product is not dry before the temperature dips below freezing, you can have, I'll put it this way, I have carousels of slides of winter injury on conifers and broadleaf yes. rhododendrons, strictly due to the repellent froze on the plant and cause tissue damage.
Yeah.
So pick a good day.
Okay.
Pick a good day.
And keep after them. Keep after
and,
them.
And so, be persistent. Absolutely.
Well, Brad Roller, thank you so much for some of these deer tips. And again, I'll be tuning in, I know, to your lecture okay. for Innisfree Garden on Wednesday, the 23rd. And I'll talk to you again soon, I hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. Been
okay.
fun.
Okay.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, the leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening, preferably without the deer, meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.